For members only, Golf Smarter number 360, published on December 4, 2012.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
Dealing with and overcoming golf injuries with Bob Foreman.
This is Golf Smarter. Each week we tap the best minds in golf to help lower your scores with tips, drills, insights, and advice. In conversation with course pros, architects, authors, players, teaching gurus, and coaches, here's your host, Fred Green.
Welcome back to Golf Smarter for members only, Bob.
Hey, it's a pleasure being back, Fred.
Thank you. I appreciate you spending some extra time talking about this because I wanted to go back for a minute about you were talking about the C curve and the S curve, the different postures that golfers are suffering through. And I'm not sure if it was you who mentioned this or somebody else, but it was an epiphany for me. And that was my posture at address, bending at the hips versus bending at the waist. And can you expand on that? Because I found that when I'm, if I have this right, that bending at my hips, so a little bit, you know, about 4 or 5 inches below my waist, I'm in better position to get a good turn. It just seemed to make a difference when I focused on keeping my posture, starting, you know, at my hip joints and bending there versus just bending over and hunching over the ball.
Yeah, I mean, the hip hinge, as they technically call it, is is definitely much better when you do hinge from the hip, because that will allow you to have a much straighter spine. I mean, spine's not straight, but you know what I'm talking about. When you look at somebody from the side, you want to see their back relatively flat as they're addressing the ball. When you bend over at the waist, what happens is you tend to get more into that rounded, bowed back posture, that C posture. So, yeah, you know, between the two, you definitely want to focus on more of a hip flexion, a hip hinge. And a lot of times people have difficulty with that because their hamstrings are tight. We talked about the tight hamstrings in the first part there a little bit. And in some cases, I mean, the hamstrings are really tight. And in that case, it's going to prevent you or it's going to hold you back really from efficiently hinging from the hip, because the hamstring won't allow that hip bone to rotate as you are bending forward. So you tend to bend more at the waist and get into that C posture. So tightness in the hamstring is a big factor for allowing you to get into a good hitting position or a good address position over the ball.
And now I think this is a good lead in to talk about injuries, golf injuries, and what causes them, what we need to do about them. And I hate asking multiple questions at once, but the things that I'd like to cover about golf injuries are: how do we deal with them? Should we stop playing golf? How long? Or play through it? Be tough, be a guy, be a man. You know, I mean, like, what injuries are we talking about that you see most of the time for golfers? And I apologize for asking too many questions at once. I don't like doing that. So.
Well, I mean, you definitely got to be a man to play through it. Back injuries tend to be number one. And there are multiple reasons why that's so. Just having muscle tightness in specific areas like the hamstrings, the muscles in the back of the thighs, or the hip flexors, the muscles in the front part of the hip, that alone can lead to low back discomfort and low back pain. Forget about playing golf, just everyday, living. Those particular muscle deficiencies can enhance your incidence of low back discomfort. So, I mean, and a simple way to test for hamstring tightness is just to stand up, place your feet together, keep your knees locked, and nice and easy, bend forward at the hips and reach down towards the floor with your fingers as far as you can go, you know, until you feel that stretch in the back of the leg. Now, the goal there to pass that assessment that we do with golfers is they would need to be able to touch the floor with their fingertips. And if they can't, it means that their hamstrings are tight. And the further away from the floor they are, the tighter the hamstrings and the greater the risk of developing low back discomfort and pain. Now, you combine that with the action of swinging a golf club, you know, twisting the body and exploding in the downswing, and it's like a perfect storm. I mean, it's just, you know, you're just waiting for that back to just get blown out. So in that situation, you really want to make sure you focus on stretching those hamstrings, and there are specific stretches to do so that you can enhance the flexibility of the hamstrings, and then a lot of times that alleviates the back issues. Another issue that I see a lot, or another cause for low back discomfort that I see quite a bit, and it actually stems from the mid-back, the thoracic spine area.
Hmm.
Now, the thoracic spine, you know, a lot of people think that they get their rotation in the golf swing from the lower back. And really, the lower back is geared more for stability, strength. And it's really the mid-back area, right, kind of where the rib cage is and stuff, is really where rotation should come from. And the higher up you go in that mid-back area towards the neck, the more rotation you should be able to get. Now, there is an assessment that we do with golfers to test to see whether or not their mid-back is tight. And many golfers fail that test. And, you know, come out with having tightness in that area. And when you're tight in that mid-back thoracic spine area, what's going to happen is as you start to turn the upper body, start to rotate the body back in the backswing and bringing the club back, if the mid-back is tight, it's not going to allow you to really rotate as far as you'd like to in order to get a good shoulder turn and a good backswing. And so you get to a certain point, and those tight muscles are saying, you know, we're not going to let you go, but you still want to go back further. So what has to happen is you have to recruit the lower back in the rotation. And the lower back just doesn't like that. And so, again, you're swinging a golf club, you know, hundreds of times during a round of golf, and if you're in that situation where your mid-back is tight, and you're recruiting that lower back into the rotation, that's going to start putting some stress on the lower back, and over time, you know, you're going to injure the lower back. So it's interesting how, you know, tightness in the mid-back and tightness down below the hip and the hamstrings and or the hip flexors can create low back injury and low back pain.
I'm kind of surprised. We've never really talked about the mid back and what kind of injuries, pains are we going to have with mid back issues?
Well, I mean, like I say, you know, the mid back is a big precursor. Tightness
sure.
in the mid back is a big precursor for the low back discomfort and injury.
I see. Okay, so it's going to translate there, but I think it also translates if you know where you were saying where the turn comes from. It's going to translate in your distance, your accuracy, your ball striking ability, right?
Oh yeah. You know, if, again, you know, if if you don't have that ability to get the club back, you know, and the club head doesn't travel as far in the backswing, it's not going to be able to travel as far in the downswing. So you're basically robbing yourself of club head speed, and that inevitably cuts back on your distance. It also can cause you to go into other types of swing faults that can cause back discomfort. You know, the two most common swing faults, or I should say the two top swing faults that lead up to back injury are reverse spine. And basically what that is your upper body is leaning back towards the target as you bring the club back into the backswing.
Oh. So on the backswing, your back Your back is to the target, and you're leaning in that towards that direction?
And you're leaning back towards the target, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Ideally, when you get over the ball, all right, for a right-handed golfer, let's say, your right hand is going to be lower on the club than your left hand. So that automatically gets your right shoulder a little bit lower and your spine angling away from your target. All right? That's your secondary spine angle, left to right. Your primary spine angle is your front to back. All right? So your spine angle is angling away from the target. Now, when you bring the club back into the backswing, ideally you want to keep that spine angle angling away from the target, because that's going to set you up at the top of the backswing in a good position so that you can initiate the downswing in the proper hitting sequence. And that's starting with the hips, then the body, then the arms, then the club. A lot of golfers, unfortunately, will go into reverse spine, where as they bring the club back, the spine angle now goes from facing away from the target to leaning back towards the target. All right, so can you picture that in your mind?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm with you.
So what happens is, number one, you're in a bad hitting position to initiate the downswing in the proper hitting sequence. So your arms tend to take over the downswing versus your hips. So you tend to become an upper body swinger. And you swing with the arms, you tend to come over the top, and you tend to cast the club out early in the downswing. So because you come over the top, you're going to have a slice because you're going to cut the ball. And because you're throwing the club out too soon in the downswing, you tend to increase the loft of the club, and you tend to have more trajectory upward, so you lose distance. And so you're not a happy camper. But the other thing is that reverse spine puts a lot of pressure on the lower back as you come back down into the downswing. It's actually the number one swing fault for low back discomfort.
Interesting.
The other swing fault that leads to back injury and back discomfort is called early extension. And what early extension is, and that deals with the hips. Now, when you're standing over the ball and your arms are down, hanging down towards the ball, you have a pretty good space there that you've developed from bending at the hips, the hip hinge. And as you bring the club back and then you start your downswing, what happens in early extension is that your hips will start moving towards the ball and actually kind of closing down on that nice space that you had before you started the backswing.
Mm-hmm.
And so as the hips move forward, as the arms are coming down through the ball, they're basically getting cramped in there, and you don't have as much room, so you tend to block and push the ball out to the right. And so a lot of golfers, a lot of the smarter golfers will say, okay, well, I got to throw more wrists into my shot, and they start hitting the duck hooks. So characteristics of early extension are you either tend to push the shot out to the right all the time, or you start hitting these duck hooks. But the act of that hip moving towards the ball, again, starts to put pressure on the lower back, and that's usually the second biggest swing fault that leads up to low back issues. Now, early extension, there's a strong correlation between tightness in the hamstrings, and there you go. There's,
we're back to that.
For low back, yeah. And or tightness in the calves, and or weak glutes, your buttocks, as Forrest Gump would say. And weak glutes are also a factor just by themselves for low back discomfort, because they should be the strongest muscles in the body. I mean, those are your power muscles in your golf swing. And they also will impact, your ability, or I should say will have an influence on your back when you're standing. So weak glutes, tight hamstrings, just like I say, factors for back issues. And then you combine it with some of these poor swing faults, and that's why low back injury is number one.
And what about number two? Now, we've been very focused on the back. I was curious to also talk about elbows, shoulders, knees. What other parts, swing faults are going to create problems there?
Well, elbows. Let's talk about tendonitis in the elbows.
Okay.
You know, a lot of golfers have tendonitis, and you know, you'll see them out there with the straps on their forearms to try to spread out the stress to the from the impact and the ball to the greater area in the forearm. But in a lot of cases, tendonitis develops because of lack of range of motion in the shoulder, and especially external shoulder rotation. And there's a way you can measure that and determine how much range of motion a golfer has. And ideally, you know, we want to try to get the golfer to about 110 degrees. I mean, when you think about somebody doing the Boy Scout signal, you know, with their arm out to the side and then the elbow bent at 90 degrees.
Okay, I'm doing it.
If you start in that position and then from there you just rotate back your hand and your forearm, that's external rotation in the shoulder.
Oh, okay. How far should I be able to go before it starts hurting?
Well, you're going to start at 90 degrees,
yep.
And you should be able to go back at least another 20 degrees.
Okay.
To have sufficient external shoulder rotation.
It hurts.
Now some golfers have difficulty getting just to 90 degrees.
And wow.
That's a big issue. Anywhere between a 90 and 110, we want to start to work on some range of motion exercises to increase that range of motion. Because what happens when you're swinging the golf club on the trail side, which would be the right side for a right-handed golfer, as you're bringing the golf club back, you're going to externally rotate that right shoulder in order to get the club back. If you have limited range of motion there, what's going to happen is you tend to either limit your backswing or you tend to throw the elbow out and have that flying elbow.
Mm-hmm.
Or you'll change your swing plane. You'll start on kind of a rotational swing and then go vertical with the swing plane. Or you go into reverse spine. So see, one thing, a lot of times, one thing leads to another.
Yeah, I was just going to say that it sounds like everything's interconnected here, that this begets this begets this.
Yeah. And if it's on the target side, so left side for a right-handed golfer, as you're coming down through the ball through impact, you want to be able to kind of extend out towards the target. But if you lack range of motion in that target shoulder, that left shoulder for a right-handed golfer, what's going to happen is you'll see the characteristics is the elbow will kind of hug the body as you go around on the follow-through, as opposed to being able to extend out towards the target. So you basically kind of shorten the arc of the follow-through swing. And like I say, in either case, and that's called a chicken wing, by the way, swing fault. And in either case, you know, you're putting a lot of stress on the elbow, and that tends to lead to inflammation, tendonitis in the elbow.
Mm.
So again, it's kind of interesting where, you know, one part of the body will influence a different part of the body.
Hmm.
Yeah, so I mean, exercises to help increase range of motion in the shoulder joint are definitely warranted in that regards. And again, you know, with a little time and a little consistency, you'd be surprised what a difference that can make.
Interesting. Lower body, lower half, knees, ankles.
You know,
are those golfers complain about stuff like that?
Not as much. You know, it depends. Again, a lot of it is kind of mechanics in that regards. If you see that a golfer, well, let's take the lead leg, you know, on a golfer, the target leg, again, a left knee for a right-handed golfer. You know, if you have an injury to the left side of the body for a right-handed golfer, it tends to be a lot worse than the right side because that's where all your weight ends up. And obviously for a lefty golfer, it would be on your right side. And a lot of times what you'll see with the knees is that if a golfer has excessive movement in the downswing where they tend to slide the hips excessively.
And that's very common, right? There's so many people that I notice, and I'm guilty myself, of just left to right hip movement.
Yeah, you tend to see it quite a bit. And again, there's various reasons why that occurs.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's excessive in the downswing, a lot of times you'll see kind of that knee, that left knee, kind of buckle out a little bit, if you can kind of picture that.
So, on a right-handed golfer, on the backswing, and this is something that we've talked about a lot with like Tony Manzoni, at least I learned it from him. So many golfers, they'll on their backswing, they lift their left heel on their backswing, and then their left knee points to
target.
Well, it doesn't point towards the ball. It should be pointing towards the ball, right? It should be out, but no, it like cuts across their body.
Yeah, yep. And then on the downswing, what happens is the knee, the hips will start to shift laterally, and the knee actually starts pointing out towards the target.
Mm-hmm.
So it's almost like your legs in a sideways V shape. And it tends to put a lot of pressure on the knee joint.
Mm.
I mean, and that slide move, I mean, the swing fall, it's called a slide, where basically, you know, your left side of the body for a right-handed golfer is moving too much laterally. It puts a lot of pressure on, it can put a lot of pressure on the knee. And a lot of times, you know, golfers do that because either they have lack of range of motion in their internal hip rotators. So as they're coming down through the ball and they're starting that lateral movement, there should be a slight lateral movement in the hips, and then you want to start to rotate the hips. But they can't rotate because their internal hip rotators on that side are tight, and in some cases extremely tight. So that's not allowing that freedom of movement in the hip. So as the golfer is bringing the club down, they start the lateral movement, but then they can't stop it, so they keep moving laterally. So that tends to lead to that slide move, and a lot of times that tends to lead to that knee just kind of pointing out towards the target. And again, you know, you do that over and over and over again, and you start putting a lot of pressure on that knee, especially, you know, the ligaments on both sides of the knee. And it just takes a toll after a while.
Sure.
Yeah.
Do you ever see issues that, and again, a very common occurrence on the backswing when you have that left knee, for a right-handed golfer, the left knee cutting across the body, pointing, you know, behind you versus pointing in front of you, the right knee tends to lock.
Yeah.
And that's a very common mistake that I'm learning. Actually, when I don't lock my knee, when I make sure that I keep some flexion, is that the right word, in my knee, that I tend to hit the ball straighter. I tend not to hook the ball as much.
Yes, because when you lock that back knee, that trail knee,
right,
you tend to over-rotate your hips, to be honest with you. And that can lead to a whole host of things. You know, if you tend to over-rotate, it's going to take you longer to come back with the hips. I mean, you know, we're talking a whole different subject here, but that can impact, you know, your consistency in your golf swing, definitely, for sure. I mean, another big injury area is the wrists.
Right. That's where I was headed next.
Now, you know, and a lot of that is more because, you know, you want to be a hero and you hit your shot out of the woods and you didn't realize there was a root there or something like that. I mean, so that, you know, that takes an impact. And when you really think about slamming a club into the ground, I mean, even when you're out in a fairway, I mean, that sends a jolt up through the club into the wrists and the forearms and elbow and stuff, and that can also take a toll on wrists and elbows and shoulders and stuff.
Well, and to get a divot, you're supposed to get that club head down into the ground. So it's
exactly.
smash the ball into the ground and get that divot.
Exactly. But the other thing is that a lot of us, many of us, are walking around with an imbalance in our forearms. You know, we tend to be stronger on the underside of our forearms because, you know, the flexors, because we're gripping things all day. So the muscles on the underside tend to be stronger than the muscles on the top part of our forearm, the extensors, which are responsible for kind of spreading out our fingers.
Okay, when you say top part of the forearm, you mean the side of the back of your hand?
Your
forearm versus, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so because we have that imbalance with the flexors being stronger than the extensors, that can lead to issues in the wrist, elbow, and even shoulder. You know, carpal tunnel, a lot of people have carpal tunnel because of that imbalance. And again, it's something that a lot of people just don't realize that they have. it just develops because of the fact, you know, again, we're gripping doorknobs, we're gripping chairs, we're gripping, and we really don't do anything to balance out that strength by providing a resistance to the extensors. I mean, how many times do you have a resistance when you are going from a closed fist to an open finger position? Hardly ever. So you don't really get a chance to work those extensor muscles as much. So then you take a sport like golf, which kind of gets your wrists and, you know, into kind of what's called an abduction, you know, multiple plane type movement as you're swinging the golf club, and you have this imbalance in your forearm that just leads up to increased risk for injuries in the wrist and the elbow and the shoulders. So what you need to do is you need to balance that out. And I'm a big proponent anyway of forearm strength in the golf swing. I think that really helps in terms of being able to hit better shots and to, as we talked about in the first segment, get more power and distance into your golf swing. But you really got to get some balance into the forearm. And there's a real great exercise. You can do a simple little exercise to help the extensors. It's called a rubber band extension exercise.
Uh-huh.
And all you do is you just take a rubber band and wrap it around you put your fingers together with your thumb, and you take the rubber band and you wrap it around the first knuckle, and then you just open and close your fingers against the rubber band. And you can do that, you know, during
I'm reaching my drawer here. I'm pulling out a rubber band. Okay, yeah. So
put your fingers together with your thumb.
Okay.
And then wrap the rubber band around the first knuckle.
Okay.
You know, the knuckle closest to the fingernails. And then just basically open and close, open, close, open, close.
Wow.
And if you do that about 20, 25 times, you'll start to feel the burn, especially in the top of your forearm.
Yeah.
You know, the back side of your hand. But that's a great exercise to really isolate those extensors so that you can get balance into the forearm so that you can reduce the risk of injury in the wrist, elbow, and shoulders.
Does it matter how I hold my hand, wrist, arm? I mean, should I be hand down, elbow bent, anything like that? Or just
nope. Any way you want.
Oh, good, because, you know, I'm getting tired. I'm ready for a nap. This is a lot of work for me.
And make sure you do both sides.
Oh, God, you're really pushing me now, buddy.
Balance. Remember, balance.
Yeah, right. Okay.
But you do that 20, 25 times, a couple times during the day, and then when that gets easy to do, you get a thicker rubber band so that you have more resistance, and then you use that.
Yeah, no, this is good. I'm definitely feeling it. I'm definitely feeling it. Okay, so you've told us all about all these different issues that we have and what causes these issues and how to change it so we don't recreate these issues or continue with these issues. But I'm in pain right now. Okay, I just got off the golf course. My lower back is killing me. What do you prescribe for us to what's the best thing to do when we get these aches and pains?
Well, if the
ideally
when you get off the golf course, if you can ice the area down,
mm-hmm.
you know, for about 15 minutes or so, you know, to get an ice pack and put a thin cloth between you and the ice pack. You don't want to have frostbite on the skin.
Right.
And leave it on there, like I say, for about 15 minutes or so. That's going to help reduce or prevent excessive inflammation in the area.
And do we target the ice pack just where we feel the pain, or if it's low back, should I be targeting it on my hamstrings? Or
no, in the low back area.
Okay, where the pain is.
Yeah.
Okay.
For about 15 minutes.
Good.
And then if you're not allergic to like an Advil, just take a couple of Advil, anti-inflammatory, and that'll help, again, keep the inflammation down. Because the more inflammation you get, the longer the healing processes have to take. So mm-hmm. that's why, you know, if you're active and you've got a pain, you want to ice it right after the activity.
Mm-hmm.
And now if the injury is kind of prolonged, you know, it's more than, say, 3 or 4 days, you want to start going with moist heat. not dry heat, moist heat, because dry heat basically will just heat the surface of the skin, and especially for the low back area and a lot of the other areas of the body, you know, the pain is kind of deep into the body or into the joint. So the dry heat really doesn't do all that much. So you want to get the moist heat because the moist heat will penetrate.
Mm. And do we rotate the heat and ice? Or
you could, yep, you could. Especially after the first few days, you would definitely want to go with the ice to keep the inflammation down, and then you can start going with the ice at the end of the day. You know, because during the day you're going to be moving around, and so you're going to kind of place some stress to the area. So if you go with some ice initially, and then later on, moist heat would be good. If you don't want to do both, if it's been 3 or 4 days, I would go with the moist heat.
So when you talk about moist versus dry heat, I just want to make sure that I understand what you're talking about. Dry heat, in my mind, is a heating pad that you plug in. Moist heat would be one of those pillows you wrap around, I'm just going to call it a pillow. You wrap around your neck, you put them in the microwave for a minute and a half. Is that more of a moist heat?
Yeah, I mean, what I like to do is just take a towel,
okay,
wet the towel, wring it out, put it in the microwave for a couple of minutes.
Okay.
And then, put a plastic bag on the floor so that you don't get the floor wet, put the towel on it, and then, That's gently good. Lay on the towel or apply it to the area, the shoulder, the elbow, the knee. But it's got to be tolerable hot, and you got to experiment.
Yeah, don't burn your skin, right.
Yeah, you got to experiment with your microwave because, I mean, in some cases, 2 minutes may be, you may be
too long.
So I know the microwave we have here at the house, 2 minutes is good.
Yeah.
But you got to experiment with your microwave.
Yeah, we're at a minute 55 in ours.
But then, it'll probably start to cool off in about 8 to 10 minutes, so do it a second time.
Okay.
And you'd be surprised, when I tell people that, especially, again, when you've got this discomfort that's lasted for a few days or weeks. Once you go to the moist heat, it's amazing what a difference it can make.
Oh, boy, we saved the best moment for last. We get the best tip of all. And also on the anti-inflammatory, make sure that it doesn't mess with your stomach. Some of those pills will give you stomach issues, so make sure that you're eating and you do that.
Yeah, I mean, if you're unsure, definitely talk to your physician about that.
Yeah.
But the anti-inflammatory is basically, immediate. The first day or as soon as you injure it, you want to take it. So again, to reduce.
And it's not a blood level thing that you want to take every 4 hours all the time, or every 6 hours.
Well, I mean, you can, but like I say, if you're 3 and 4 days out, you basically kind of want to stop taking those things.
Right. And talk to your doctor. Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yep.
Hey, Bob, thank you. You finally answered all my questions, at least for this time around.
Well, good. You're welcome. I enjoyed it.
Yeah. I'm sure you're going to be back and again, and we have talked about more subjects and stuff, but this has really been helpful. Again, for everybody, if they want to see what Bob has to say in his writings, his blog, go to Golf Fit Carolina, and it's only one F, Golf Fit Carolina, or golfitcarolina.com. And if you have any specific questions for Bob, if you're not in the area, you're in which part of Carolina?
I'm in the Greensboro area.
Okay, yeah. High Point, North Carolina? That's what I have written
Greensboro
down here.
Greensboro, High Point, yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
So if you're not in that area and you'd like to communicate with Bob, please send me an email. Click on the Hey Fred button and let me know that you want to ask questions and I will get you guys together. That would be fine. Bob,
thanks so
much for joining us and giving all this great advice and insight. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Hey, coming up next, we're going to publish the show a little bit early. It's going to be published on December 7th, Friday, because I'm taking off for a week. I'm going down to Mexico again. Hopefully, I'll be coming back with some more information about some courses down there. But in the next two episodes, two full conversations with PGA Tour Pro, 2006 Ben Hogan Amateur Player of the Year Award winner, and 2010 PGA Tour Rookie of the Year, Matt Every. Really interesting. Great guy. Can't wait for you to hear this conversation. Also, we've got Tom with Sean talking about the new USGA ruling on putters, and the Matty B Awards are coming up as well, so stay tuned for those. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, please click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.
Smarterpodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.